All right, cool. Let's all get started. Today's session is Building Windows 8 Metro-Style UIs. Thank you for coming to the session. My name is Paul Gus Marino, and I'm one of the program manager leads on the team that is building the UI platform for Metro-Style UIs. So I'm very happy to be here on behalf of the whole team who's been working hard for the past couple of years to create this new UI platform for you in Windows 8. To help me understand where you guys are coming from, how many of you have actually installed Windows 8 and played with it at all? Like, actually installed it? Awesome. Very good. Now, how many of you have actually tried to build an app, like launch Visual Studio and tried to make a Metro-style app? Has anyone tried that yet? Excellent. Okay. How many of you have tried to do so using XAML and .NET? Okay. How many of you have tried doing so with HTML and JavaScript? Have anyone tried that? All right, good. We've got a good mixture of folks here. Very good. Just to give you some more context on me, I've been at Microsoft for 10 years, always working on UI technologies. Before Windows 8, I worked on the shell, so a lot of the features of Windows Explorer that you see in Windows 7 today. And then for the past 3 years, I've been working on the UI platform of Windows 8. Today's talk, we're really going to talk about Metro-style UI. What is it, and how can I build it? And this talk is for anyone who's planning to build a Metro-style app, or anyone who just wants to understand the UI patterns and the UI concepts of Metro-style apps better. We will do a little bit of code in the talk, but mostly it's about the concepts. And so the talk applies equally whether you're using C++, or whether you're using C# and .NET, or whether you're using JavaScript. So no matter how you're programming, the concepts are the same that we're going to talk about today. And the focus of today's talk is on the UI of your application. So to make a great Metro-style application, there's a lot more than just the UI. There's how it plugs into the system, into contracts, into the notifications, and the tiles, and the start screen, and all that stuff that you saw at the keynote the other day. Today's talk is going to focus on the UI of the application itself. And my goal is to demystify it, to give you some really tangible, practical things you can go and take home to do and patterns that you can understand to go and use to make a Metro-style app. And I hope to help you see that it's not just kind of a visual skin that you can just kind of like slap onto something, but there's a lot more substance to it. We're really going to leave kind of with a set of these patterns that you can go and take advantage of. So let's talk about what is Metro-style UI. You know, there are a lot of people who just kind of look at it and say, oh, it's bright colors, and everything is square looking, and that's Metro-style UI. There's really, at the essence of it, it's a set of patterns. It's a set of common user interface patterns is really what we think about as Metro-style UI. Now, I chose the word patterns very carefully. What do I mean by patterns? Well, patterns are all those things that we as human beings see and perceive about the world around us that we come to learn and expect to use. So in the real world, it's things like, how do I use a door? Or when I see a doorknob, I know how to use it. Or when I see a faucet, I know how one side is the hot water and the other side is the cold water. These are all patterns that we're all familiar with, you know, from the real world. And in the computer world, in the world of your applications, there are also patterns. And at the heart of it, Metro-style UI is a set of these common user interface patterns. Where do I look for commands in my app? How do I select things in my app? How do I move through content with my app? What do different touch gestures do? How do I select things with text, in text, with a mouse, with keyboard? What are the keyboard shortcuts for things? All these things add up to being UI patterns that people will come to learn and expect about applications. And by following the Metro-style UI patterns, you can make your application familiar to users and make them instantly productive, so they know right away how to get started using the application and doing things very productively in their software. And together, we kind of create this virtual world, this Metro-style world that users know how to live in and work in and interact with between the system and the applications. So it is a common set of UI patterns. Beyond that, Metro-style UI is grounded in a set of design principles. And I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about these design principles today as well. They're really important to understand for two reasons. First of all, because a lot of the patterns that I'll talk about today, you have to interpret them and figure out the right way to make them work in your application. And if you do so in a way that uses the same principles that we used, you'll help create a system that's cohesive and that users will really like to use, and that they'll find very good to use enjoyable. The other reason it's important to understand the patterns is that while we have a lot of patterns that we have defined already for Metro-style UI, you'll find that we haven't defined all of them yet. It's the new world of Metro-style UI, and all of you as people who are making applications are going to help define what Metro-style UI actually is. And if we all define it using these same principles, it'll become this coherent world for our users. And the final point about Metro-style UI I want to make at a high level, it's these set of patterns that are grounded in these principles, is that it's supported by the Windows 8 platform. And so there's a lot of detail to how these patterns work. There's a lot of detail to the how we did the pride and craftsmanship and the fast and fluid animations and so forth that we kind of built up this platform to help make possible. And so you'll find that it's not just a set of these patterns and it's not just a set of these principles, but it's these patterns grounded in these principles supported by this platform. For some of the patterns I'm going to talk about, there's a control. You can just use that control and you're done. For some of the patterns I'm going to talk about, you might have to put together a few pieces of the platform together yourself to implement the pattern. A common question I get is, Paul, can I implement Metro-style UI on Windows 7? Can I implement Metro-style UI on, you know, this case or that case in other systems? We don't think so. We tried to implement Metro-style UI in Windows 7, and we found there's a bunch of stuff we had to do and add to the platform to make that happen. And all those features that we had to add to the platform to make it so that we could implement Metro-style UI, that's what Windows 8 is. So Windows 8 is, we started with Windows 7, and we said, what do we need to do to make Metro-style UI? And all these features we had to add to the platform, to the touch stack, to graphics, to composition and presentation, to the control set, all those things we had to add are the things we needed to make Metro-style UI. And so that's kind of why you need Windows 8 to do it. So that's kind of a high-level picture about it. Let's look at an application as an example to dig into this. And I'm going to pick the finance app. It's one of the applications that if you've installed the release preview is there right away. It's very ironic, the two countries that are discussed in the front page story here. So this is an app, the finance app, and it's an app that gives you financial information. And you can see right away just looking at the application, the layout pattern that's used here, it's very immersive in full screen. A very common thing you'll see in all the Metro-style apps is they take up the full screen and they focus on the content. So there's not a lot of widgets, you don't see a lot of toolbars, you don't see a lot of extra Chrome on the screen. It really is focused on the content itself. Now, if I want to move through the different kind of sections of the content, what you might have done in a traditional app, if you think about a Win32 app, for example, is you might have had tabs. But instead, what we do in Windows 8, the pattern we use is what we call the hub pattern. And so we just lay the content out horizontally and let the user pan to get between the content. And so here you have kind of the headline story. You have indexes, information about different stock indices. You have news stories. You have stock lists, you know, market movers, bonds, interest rates, funds, so forth, all this kind of information, you pan kind of through it. This is actually implemented using the scroll view control. And so because they use the scroll view control, they get a really very rich experience. There's a lot of pride and craftsmanship is one of the principles we kind of use behind it. So you can see it does a good job of sticking to my finger as I pan. You can see that even if I'm sloppy when I pan, it still pans very well. You can see if I grab my mouse, I can grab the scroll bar, and I can use the scroll bar to scroll. I can use, there's a scroll wheel on this mouse, and I can use the scroll wheel to scroll as well. It supports the keyboard, so I'm hitting the home key, the end key, page up, page up, page up. So even whether you're using keyboard, mouse, or touch, it all works, you know, very well for you because there's a lot of pride and craftsmanship we put into the scroll view control. And so just using the scroll view control, they're able to implement this hub pattern very easily in this application. Now you'll see there are a lot of sections here. And so a second pattern I want to call out, in addition to the hub pattern, is what we call semantic zoom. This is another pattern that's very common that you see in these applications, these Metro-style apps. So all you do as a user is you just pinch with your fingers, and you get this kind of zoomed out view that lets you quickly see a kind of an overview of all the content, and then you can click to zoom into a certain section. So I can pinch out, and then I can zoom into another section. Or I can click twice and zoom in. And the same thing works with mouse as well and keyboard. So if you use your mouse, you'll see there's a little minus sign here. So that's part of the semantic zoom pattern. You click there. You can click with mouse. You can also use the keyboard, control minus, control plus, to zoom in and zoom out. So a second pattern kind of that's shown here is semantic zoom. And this is another very common pattern in metro-style applications. The hub pattern, semantic zoom pattern. Another thing that's very common is just how you kind of start interacting with content, for example, to select things and act on things. So if I go to this watch list here, if I move my finger up and down on these items, I can select them. Okay, that's called swipe gesture. And you see this bar at the bottom comes up here called the app bar. So see how when I selected this stock, the app bar came up there. So this selection pattern called swipe and the app bar are two more common kind of patterns of metro-style apps. And so this just gives you kind of a little bit of a sense of some of the things you'll see again and again in these apps. This kind of hub pattern, semantic zoom, swipe to select things, the app bar that comes up from the bottom of the screen. And this particular pattern here is supported by two controls. One is called the list view control, or grid view, and that's what's kind of showing those stocks there. And then this bar at the bottom, there's an app bar control. So that's how the platform supports that. And part of the principles that we used in designing this, one of the principles that I'll tell you later about is do more with less. So we really wanted to say, hey, you don't have to show those commands all the time. Just show the commands when the user really needs them at the time when it's appropriate. And the other principle is fast and fluid. So I'm actually going to go and kind of delete a stock here, for example. And you'll see that as I did that, there's a smooth animation. So the user could see exactly what happened. And that was an example of fast and fluid. So let's go back to the deck. So we just showed kind of an app, a metro-style app, kind of a business application. So you can imagine lots of other business applications you might, you know, want to have in your enterprise that maybe could be similar to this. And let's just say what we just talked about. We said, look, metro-style UI is a set of common user interface patterns grounded in a set of design principles and supported by the Windows 8 platform. And so now let's dig into those some more. So what are these patterns? And most of the talk today is going to go in depth, talking through these different patterns. And the patterns I'm going to talk about are around layout, how the apps are kind of laid out and how they flow to fit the screen space, around navigation, how you get through the content in the application, how you switch between sections. Around commanding, how do you expose commands and let people take action on stuff in the application? Around scrolling content, there's a lot of work we did in Windows 8 to have a great experience around scrolling content, and I want you to be aware of the capabilities there for you. Around presenting data, you know, a lot of applications that present data. Maybe it's data from a web service, maybe it's data from a database, from the file system, maybe it's just in-memory data. We have a lot of controls and patterns around selecting and working with and interacting with data. We just have a whole bunch of essential controls, I call them, things like buttons and sliders and combo boxes, and I want to talk about those a little bit so you're aware of the patterns there. And then around text editing, which has always been an important part of the Windows platform and how we've enhanced that with things like spell checking and other features this release for you. And I want to talk about these principles. So those are the patterns we're going to talk about, and I want you to keep in the back of your heads as we talk about these patterns, these principles that we used in designing the patterns, because these principles are kind of the heart of the metro-style UI and important to understand. And so let me give you some examples of them. Pride in craftsmanship was the first principle for us. And to me, that means it's not just about things being functional, but it's about every single way a user might do something in an application. It should feel designed. It should feel like there's an intentional purpose that you had. So it's not enough to say there's one way to pan. We want to say any way the user tries to do something, it should kind of work and be logical and make sense. So for example, when I showed you the panning before, and as I'll show you later, it's not that you have to move your finger perfectly and there's just one way to pan. Even if you're sloppy, we're still pan the right way. Even if you go and use your mouse, we still pan the right way. Even if you try to use some obscure keyboard shortcut, we still pan the right way, because we want every path that the user might use to do something to feel designed and intentional. And that's kind of what pride in craftsmanship is really about. The second principle we use is fast and fluid. And fast and fluid is actually ironic, because sometimes those are in conflict. If you want to make something fast, sometimes you say no animations, right? Just screen, 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 screen. But at the same time, if you want to make things fluid, sometimes that can feel slow. Oh, there are all these slow animations and things and slowing stuff down. And so we thought there's a balance to strike, that you have to make things fast and fluid. And if you do both those things the right way, you can actually create a superior experience. And to me, an example of that is if you use the list view control or the grid view control, and I'll talk about those patterns today, you'll see that there are things like delete. When you delete an item, we do a quick little animation. So the item disappears and the other items rearrange into place. And the reason we did that is because we had this fast and fluid principle. And if we didn't make that animation, then the user they might be confused about what got deleted. You know, you hit delete, and then there's one screen, then the other screen, and it's hard to see what happened. So having that animation helps them see what happened, but we still made it a very fast animation, and we didn't make it kind of a slow, taking your time thing. So it's the kind of balance that I think fast and fluid is all about. Authentically digital. Now, this is a principle that we also used a lot, and the heart of this principle is if you think about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when we were making Windows 95, the metaphor that we used at the time was the desktop metaphor. So we had a recycle bin, we had folders, we took all these things that exist in the real world and we tried to make little icons for them on the computer screen. That's because 20 years ago, computers were new to people still, and people were still learning kind of these concepts and what it even meant to use a computer. Well, now that's not an issue anymore. Everybody has a computer, everybody knows how to use a computer. And so instead, the focus is on making the most use of the computer and using that device and that form factor to kind of give the most value to customers, make it the most efficient experience, the best looking, most, you know, desirable experience. And so we use this principle of authentically digital, and you'll see this in our UI. When I show you the calendar app, we didn't try to make it look like a physical calendar. We tried to say, what's the best way to use the PC to show, you know, someone's calendar to them? When we think about zooming, I think that's a great example. When you think about the semantic zoom control, when I pinch on things, if in the real world, if I were to pinch on something, I would like scrumple it up. It would become like a scrunched up piece of paper, you know. But on the computer, when you zoom like that, we can actually say, well, what is the user trying to do? Well, let's show them a higher level view of the information, of the data. Okay, so that's an example of authentically digital in that principle. Do more with less. You know, this is something that we thought a lot about, because anyone who's designed UI knows that every single extra thing you add to your UI makes it more complicated for some other user. It distracts some other user. It slows down some other user. So everything you add and you tack onto your UI, while you're making that one thing possible, you're probably making something else the user is trying to do worse in the application. And so we really thought hard about how can we do more with less? How can we make users very productive and effective and able to do all the things that they want to do in their applications, but at the same time not have so much stuff there that it's distracting and making it hard for them to do the main things that they're trying to do all the time. And so one of the patterns that we developed that you should take advantage of to help you have that in your applications is the app bar, because the app bar lets you have more commands available on demand without cluttering your UI all the time, so that the main thing the user is doing in the application can continue to be the focus all the time. And then finally, we had a principle called win is one. And this is a principle we used internally within the team when we were designing the system to say, hey, let's all make sure we work together and make everything work, you know, perfectly well together in the system. But I think to all of you who are developing applications, it really means two things. First, when you think about your application, don't think that you have to do everything inside your own application. If you saw the keynote the other day, you saw that there are these contracts, for example, like the share contract. And so if you want to have a way for people to email something from your application, we'll just use the share contract to do that, and then they can do it through the mail app. Think about how your application can be focused, and together using other applications on the system that you make or that other people make, you can complete the scenario for users. If you want to post to SkyDrive, there's a SkyDrive app. So you can use Share to connect up through that, or the Picker APIs. And so win is one. Part of that is think about the focus of your application, how it can work with the other applications. And then the second thing about win is one that I'll say to you is we're here to help you make great apps. Like, that's why my team exists at Microsoft, the UI platform team, to make it so that you can make great apps that your users love, that's easy for you to make, and so forth. And so where we've invested and created some platform features for you, take advantage of them to help you make the best app you can make so you can focus your time on the unique novel stuff that you're doing. So we have a scroll view, we have a list views, we have app bars. Take advantage of those rather than trying to implement those things yourselves. That way you can spend your time on the kind of the unique special stuff that you're going to be doing in your app. And so now let's talk about the platform. Everything that I'm going to talk about today you can do, whether you're using C++ or C#, .NET, in XAML. And if you're using JavaScript, you can do with a combination of two things, HTML and CSS, and also this JavaScript library called the Windows Library for JavaScript that we've written and made available as part of Windows 8 for you. And so you'll find that between HTML and the JavaScript library, you have all the controls and the platform features that you need. And then you have the same thing in XAML. And what I want to point out is that regardless of how you build it, They're all powered by the same underlying Windows platform. So, for example, when you pan and scroll in an application, or if you use spell checking in text boxes, or if you use certain touch gestures to swipe things or bring up the app bar, the same underlying platform components of Windows are called, whether you're using XAML or using HTML. We plumbed everything through in this layered kind of way to give you that, so you have the same powerful platform no matter how you're implementing your app. And just to kind of illustrate that a little bit, I wanted to show you two examples of a toggle switch control. It's one of the controls in the platform, just to kind of show the parity there to make that clear to people. So if you're familiar with XAML, this markup here will make a lot of sense to you. There is a, is this a laser pointer? Yeah, OK. So you define the control that you want to use, a toggle switch. You can set options on it. So you can set the header is Wi-Fi networking. You can set options properties on the control. You can give it a unique identifier, X name equals my toggle. And then later on in your code, you can attach an event handler. So you can say, my toggle.toggled adds a new routed event handler that calls some toggle Wi-Fi function that you wrote. Okay, so if you, if any of you are familiar with XAML programming, in C Sharp, you'll be familiar with this way of hooking up a control, setting properties on it, handling events on it. Now, I'm going to show you the same slide for HTML. So those of you who have tried working with HTML in the Windows Library for JavaScript will kind of find this one familiar. So here's the same exact control. Here's the way we've defined with the Windows Library for JavaScript. You can declaratively define a control. So you do data win control, winjs.ui.toggleSwitch. That's the kind of the pattern for declaratively defining controls in JavaScript. You can set options on them. That's just a JSON object array there. Data win options, title, Wi-Fi networking. So you can pass the same kinds of options to the control. You put a unique identifier it using the ID attribute, just like you do in HTML ordinarily. And you add an event listener the same way you do in HTML ordinarily. You add an event listener for the change event, and you have it call the toggle Wi-Fi function in response to that. So just going back and forth between those two slides, you see that you can have the same kinds of controls or the same kinds of parity of how you can set options on them, uniquely identify them, and do event listening and so forth. Whether you're using HTML or XAML. So that was kind of an overview of the overall big picture about stuff, about there's a set of patterns or these principles, there's this platform neutrality, but they're all powered by the same underlying capabilities in the system. Let's dig into each of the different patterns now so we can understand them much better. We're going to start with the layout patterns. When we think about the layout patterns, and this is important to understand because Windows 8 runs on a whole different size set of screens. So you guys have probably all seen, demos we've done where we have it on a small tablet. You've seen, it on laptops. You've seen it on big screens. Windows 8 runs on all these different types of devices and screens. And so you have to think about, how do I make my application fit on all these screens and still have that immersive kind of experience for users? The other thing is you can rotate screens sometimes. And as you saw in the keynote, you can sometimes snap apps. You can have two apps next to each other. And so you have to think about all those different cases. And here's some of the patterns that you'll want to use, and we'll do a demonstration of them as well. In general, there are two main ways you might think about laying out your app. One is we call the fixed pattern, and the other one we call the adaptive pattern. If you have an application where you have a very specific type of UI that you've very carefully configured, imagine, for example, a game of chess, okay? No matter what size screen someone's on, a game of chess always has an 8x8 board. You're not going to add more, make it 12 by 12 or something on a bigger screen. It's always 8 by 8. It's chess, okay? So that's an example of something you use the fixed pattern for. No matter the screen size, you kind of stretch up that UI to make it fit. On the other hand, sometimes there are applications that use an adaptive pattern. For example, you're presenting data, stock quotes, news articles, RSS feeds, whatever data you have in your app you want to present. There, you might present more data as there's more screen space available, okay? So we're going to talk about some of the techniques to do fixed versus adaptive layout. And then the other thing you'll want to pay attention to is the snap versus the filled state of your application. So if you have an app that's snapped, you still want it to be a fully functional app for users. It's not supposed to just stretch down the UI in some weird way. You want it to be fully functional and useful, but kind of fit into that space. And I know you can do it because the size we picked for the snap state is actually the same as the size on the Windows phone, for example. So that's, you can definitely make a full-featured app in that same amount of screen space. So let's look at some demos of this to understand how you can kind of have these different layout patterns. I'm going to start with an app called the Weather app. Here it is. Oh, actually, I'm not going to launch it there. I'm going to launch it in this thing called the Simulator. So one of the apps we have available in Windows 8 is this simulator app. And I highly recommend, if you're developing an app, you use this, because it lets you simulate different screen sizes, rotation, and so forth, so you can test your app out and see how it's working. So here I'm going to launch the weather app. It's one of the apps that we kind of have in the box. And I think it's a great example of an adaptive layout. And let me talk about the different things this application did to do a great adaptive layout. First, you'll see there's different sections to the app. This first screen here is just showing you kind of the current weather. And they just took advantage of some layout primitives to lay this out. So see here where there are these different, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, et cetera. There they just used one of the layout primitives called Flexbox. This app happens to be in HTML. So they use something called CSS Flexbox, but it's very much like Stack Panel for those of you in XAML. And so they use that to kind of lay this out horizontally. So they have a horizontal layout, some Stack Panel, these dates here. Here, this next section here, they have the hourly forecast. To make that fit, they used a scroll view. So you can see I can scroll up and down here in this content. Then next to this here, they have these maps. And these they laid out using a grid view. And so the grid view knows how to lay things out and make them kind of fit to the screen in this kind of grid pattern. That's the grid view. And then here at the end, they had a totally custom, you know, thing they built. Probably they built this with Canvas, you know, in HTML. If you're using XAML, you could use the DX interop and build something, you know, totally custom with DX here, a 3D graph or whatever you wanted to do. I think this is a good example of an app that's kind of done three different, you know, several different patterns within the one app to kind of fit to the screen. So let's look at what happens in this application when I make the screen bigger. So now it's a 10-inch screen. I'm going to make it a 23-inch screen. Okay, so much bigger resolution screen. And we'll see what happened here in the bigger screen. Well, where the app had the first section where they're using the layout primitives, whoops. Let's launch that again. Real code. The first screen where they're using the layout primitives, they just made that image, that cloud image, bigger, right? So they gave it more space, okay? They filled the space of that primitive. Here where they're using the scroll view control, they made it bigger, so now there's less scrolling you have to do, okay? But that's how they kind of fit the space. They just made the scroll view bigger and then automatically more content fit. Here where they use the grid, you can see, if you remember before, there were three columns. Because they used the grid view control, now they had more space, so it just relayed the stuff out into two columns. It automatically fit. And here they just have their same custom, you know, visual again. All right, now let's see what happens if I rotate the screen. All right, now here we'll see, now what do they do? Where they're using that flex box, that stack panel type of thing, that layout primitive, they flip the orientation of it. They said, hey, you know what, to use this space more efficiently, instead of being left to right, horizontal, they change these things here so they're up and down. So you see how they're up and down? Here where they're using the scroll view, they're still using the scroll view, but it turns out if you have a 23.7-inch monitor and you rotate it, it's so tall, there's no more scrolling needed. So, you know, they made the scroll view as big as it needed to be, but, you know, there's no more scrolling needed. So that's how it fit there better. Here, because they're using a grid layout, again, it reflowed the content as best as it could into take up that space. And here they just kept their custom kind of layout. So you can see all three types of things being done in this application to kind of use that space. Layout primitives, and it's very easy. They just switched it to be horizontal versus vertical. The scroll view, they just made it bigger and it flowed the content. The grid view, they just made it bigger and it reflowed the content for them. And then here they had some custom thing, and they chose not to do anything fancy here, but if they'd wanted to, they could have stretched it or done other kinds of things. It's their own custom, you know, UI that they did there. All right, so that's that. Now let's go back. I want to go this way. And let's look at a fixed, so that's an adaptive layout. Let's look at a fixed layout application. And I'm going to actually make this a little small. I'll start big. I'm going to use Pirates versus Daisies. So this is just a game. It's available on the App Store. By the way, I want to point out all the apps I'm using for today's demo are available to you on the store. So I don't have any fake apps I've made just for this presentation. These are all apps you can go and download and try yourself and explore yourself if you use the release preview of Windows 8. So here's this game. And you can see how they're using this, you know, all this screen space for their game. But here we go. And they have kind of, their map is a certain size. And so on this giant screen, they kind of put this cool little border area, you know, around it on the side. But let's see what happens on a smaller screen. So if I go down to a 10-inch screen, you'll see that they got rid of all that extra stuff, but then they kept the board itself the same exact size because they had a very careful layout for their board and the way their game board has to work. So this is an example of how you might have a fixed layout thing and you still kind of work on bigger screens. And then let's see what happens if I try to snap this. So I'm actually going to go and grab that weather app and kind of pull it in using the snapping feature. And so let's see what happens here. You see that the game, they got rid of that little pirate thing, so they still have the game board fitting full size, so it's still fully functional in this state. And the weather app, even though they don't have all the sections they had in the original weather app, it still is useful information. So they said, they didn't just put like a blank thing, they didn't try to stretch the whole app to fit like in a little rectangle or anything like that. They said, how can we design the app to work well in that size? What's useful to show there? And they did that in the weather app. Okay? And then if I flip this even more, you can see now the weather app is a fully functional app. It has all those same sections that you saw before. And the game, it automatically paused. And that's a fair thing to do also when you're kind of laying things out. At a certain point, you can say, you know what? This game, it's so little space, they can't, in the fixed layout, work in that small of a space. And so they just kind of paused it and show a nice little animation. So you can see how with a fixed layout, it's some very small size. When you snap, you might just decide to kind of pause the game or something like that if it really can't fit in that size. All right, so we just saw adaptive layout. We saw some of the specific techniques you can do to create an adaptive layout, how it works when you make a screen bigger and smaller, how it works when you rotate, how it works when you snap things. And we also saw that same information with the fixed layout. So let's go back to the deck. All right, that was layout patterns. Make use of the space. Use the fixed layout when you have a more rigid design content. Use the adaptive layout when you have more flexible data-driven content. Support the snap state. Consider supporting portraits, and use those platform features that I mentioned to help you achieve that with high performance. We spent a lot of time in all those platform features optimizing the performance of them to make things like resizing and rotating fast. All right, now it's about navigating in the app. So you've laid out your app. You've got the overall layout. Now, how do users get around the app and navigate through content in the application? Well, we have a few patterns you might want to use in your application. The first one is called the hub pattern. And so the hub pattern I'm going to talk about is if you have a lot of content you want to show the user, how do they just kind of move through that content? And you'll see that it's you pan through a bunch of sections, and you can click on headers to move into more details about each section, and I'll show that. Another pattern we have is the navigation bar, and I'll show this as well. And the navigation bar is for switching between entirely different sections of the application. So maybe your application has multiple sections. Navigation bar will let you switch between those sections. And in all cases, we really recommend people use and have a back button and to let people go back. And so I'll show that as well. So let's get into a demo of hub pattern, navigation bar, and the back button. And I'm going to do that using the store app and the finance app. And again, these are two of the apps we have on the system for you. So let's look at the store first. So here's the store app. The main thing you do on the store is you go and you download apps. And they have a lot of different categories. And so again, like I mentioned earlier, instead of tabs, what they did is just lay them all out kind of horizontally. Games, social, entertainment, photos, music, and so on and so forth. So that's the hub pattern. The hub pattern is in essence saying, hey, instead of using tabs or other ways of having these sections, just lay them out all horizontally. Now, as I go between the sections, what you can do is you can click on the headers to get into more depth on it. So I'm going to click on entertainment there. And now I'm brought to the full page about the entertainment. So the hub pattern is have your kind of sections laid out. Click on the header to go into more depth. So now I'm looking at all the entertainment apps. And then from here, I can click in yet again to get to the full information about that one game. This is a very common pattern, and I'll show this to you in the finance app as well, that you'll want to use when you just have a lot of content to present to people. If you start with the default templates in Visual Studio, one of the templates we have is called the grid template. And there's one for XAML, and there's one for HTML. And if you start with that template, it automatically gives you this pattern kind of built in for you. Okay, so that's a great way to start doing it. There's a lot of other platform support for this already as well. So if you're using the way the store did this layout, so if you look at their layout, all they're showing is just a grid of information. Some of the cells are bigger, some are smaller, but it's just a grid of information. And so they actually were able to use the list view control, or the grid view control in XAML, pardon me, to do this. So that's all they had to do, is they just hooked up a list view or grid view control, hooked it up with their data, did the templating and so forth, and they kind of got this pattern for free, and everything about it. So it works with mouse and keyboard and all those things. You get hover states on the different items, on the different tiles. If you tab, you can use the arrow key to move around and go into categories and so forth. All right, so using the grid view, you can very easily implement that hub pattern. And then using inline navigation and pages as well. And one of the things I want to call out is as I navigate it into these pages, you'll see these animations play. So if I go back and forth, so I click on games, for example, see how the title kind of comes animated in and the content comes animated in? There's something called the animation library, and that's another part of the platform you can use. So to help you building these navigation pattern of the hub pattern, you can use the animation library to get these page transition animations. So look into that to learn about how to do the page transition animations as you're navigating inline. It's not like a traditional Win32 app where you'd have pop-up windows. It's all inline navigation. And so you can use the animations to help you do that. And you can use features like in WinJS, there's a pages control that'll help you do inline single page applications like that. Okay, so this is the hub pattern. Then I want to show you in the same app the navigation bar pattern. And so if I swipe from the top, this bar comes in. And the App Store really has two different sections to the App Store. There's the home section where you're buying apps, but there's also a screen where you can just see all the apps you've previously purchased. And so they use the navigation bar to let you switch between those two big sections of the application. And I'll show you this in a second in another app, but that's kind of the navigation bar, and you implement that using the app bar control. The app bar control knows how to come in from the side when you swipe your finger, and so you just use that control. If you want to get it with mouse, you just right-click. So you just right-click in the background anywhere, and that'll pop up those bars as well. That's already hooked up for you automatically. And there's also a keyboard shortcut, Winkey Z, and that'll pop that up as well. Okay? So just use the app bar to get that navigation bar pattern. Let's look at these same two navigation patterns in the finance app as well. This is that app we saw before. Now, here, you can see the layout is quite different. They didn't just use a grid view to lay out their application because they had a lot more custom stuff. So they wanted to have these graphs here and lots of other stuff going on, but they still followed the same general model of laying out the content horizontally, and they still have the headers you can click on. So I can click on the news header, for example, to then go and see all the news. Okay? So they only showed me some of the stories on that home page, and then I can click on the header to go and see all the stories there, for example. They also have the navigation bar here. So if I pull down, I can, for example, go to the world market section, and then they show me this world market information. So they have different sections of the application. I can switch between using the navigation bar, and then within each section to see the content there, they use the hub pattern to let me kind of see the content and dig into it. And I can dig into it again, and I can go all the way, you know, into the content and so forth. All right? So that is kind of the platform support and the patterns we have around navigation. And what I talked about was the hub pattern. So use that for scenarios where you want to browse a lot of content. Use the list view or grid view to implement it if you have very structured content like the App Store had. Or otherwise, just use the scroll view if you have more loosely structured content like that finance app had. And then you have to build kind of the group headers and all that stuff yourself. Use a navigation bar when you want to have switch between different sections of the application, and you can use the app bar to implement that and give you a nice implementation of that. You should enable users to go back using the standard back button pattern. You'll want to just use the button control to implement that, and then we provide styling for you that you just style that button so that it looks like a back button. And you should use the page transition animations when you're switching around between the pages as you're navigating around, and that gives you that nice kind of the text flowing in and so forth. All right, so those are navigation patterns. So we've talked about laying out your app. We've talked about navigating around the content of the application. Now it's about commanding. So now people actually want to interact with the content. They want to do things. They want to add and delete things and reply to things and work with the content. What are the patterns we have around that? And there are several. The most visible one we've talked a bit about is the app bar. I'm going to go into more depth on that now. There's also flyout. Settings pane, message dialog, tooltip, and context menu. These are some of the controls and patterns kind of around commanding that will be relevant to you. In general, you really want to focus on the app bar, and then you might use menu and flyout a bit, and settings pane. Message dialog, we really think you should only use that if it really is a modal blocking thing. So don't use that every time you have a question for the user. Really only use that if it's like, you know, warning, uh-oh, something bad has happened, the app can't continue kind of situation. And let's talk about these kind of in more detail. I'm going to focus on app bar and flyout menu and settings pane here in the demonstration I'm going to do. We're going to do it with the Mail app. So let's pop up Mail. And this is a fun app. It's also a MetroStyle app, but you can see it's laid out very differently. A lot of the other apps I showed you had this kind of horizontal layout. Here's a different type of layout. It's still MetroStyle. You have the overall, you know, the message list, and I can click on messages and see them. Okay. Let's talk about how commanding works here. Well, the first thing you'll see is that there are three buttons in the upper right-hand corner. Do you guys see them? Those are the buttons that let you do new message, reply, and delete. The point is that whenever there's some very, very, very common commands in your application, we recommend you put them right on the command surface itself. So the Mail app designers decided that because new, reply, and delete are so common, they put those on the surface of the app itself. They didn't hide those in the app bar because they just felt they're so common, people do those all the time, they put them right there, they're very important to do very easily. They want it to be one click to do new message whenever you open the Mail app. Now, there's some commands, though, like, let's say, mark as read, or move to another folder, for example. Those you kind of do less often. And so they didn't want to clutter the UI with those and distract from the main commands and the main things you're doing, so they use the app bar for that. And so the way you get the app bar again, as you all know, you swipe from the bottom to get it. You can also right-click anywhere in the background. So if I just right-click in the background of the app, I get it. And again, it's that keyboard shortcut, Win Key Z. And that's where they have these other commands like mark as unread or mark as read. So that's kind of the app bar. Now, another time you want to bring up the app bar is sometimes you bring it up dynamically on behalf of the user when the user has done something that you know they want to go and command. An example of that is changing selection. So if the user goes and with the list view here, they can change selection. That's also something that will trigger the app bar coming up. So if I go and I start selecting more things, you see there's no app bar. Then when I select something else, it knows, gosh, he selected multiple things. He must want to do something with those items. And so they bring up the command bar automatically. So you might want to bring it up based on selection. And if you use the app bar control, you can easily do that. You can control when it comes up and down in cases like that. Now let's go and you'll see that I want to point out also the app bar commands change contextually depending on the situation. So here it says mark read because this message is unread. But if I click on this one here, you'll see there's both options, mark read and mark unread, because one of these messages is unread and one is read. So I can click mark read to make both of them mark read, or I can click mark unread to make both of them mark unread. Okay? So the commands can change dynamically depending on what's selected. And you can see the app bar handles automatically animating those in and letting that kind of be a nice experience for you if you use that control. Let's go and create a new message now, though, and look at some more of the app bar scenarios. So I can go here and I can start typing something, but I'm actually going to type using the touch keyboard because I want to highlight another feature of the app bar pattern. If I start typing hello, and let's say I want to bring the app bar up here, I still swipe from the bottom, but you see the app bar knew to position itself on top of the soft keyboard. So if you use the app bar, it knows to come up at the right place for you automatically, depending on the soft keyboard and all that kind of stuff. And then I can go and I can say bold, and then I can continue typing bold, and that thing is bold, for example. And then, as I showed before, the app bar might come up based on selection. So if I select this word bold, again, dynamically, here the app author said, ooh, the user selected some text. Probably they want to do something with it. So let's bring up the app bar to show those commands. So I can copy it, for example, to the clipboard. I can make it italic or underlined or whatever I want to do. All right? And all that same stuff is true even if I'm using the mouse. So if I use the mouse to select, same thing. Brings up the app bar automatically. Okay? Now, sometimes you can fit all the commands you want to fit in the app bar directly. But sometimes commands, there's a lot more to them. Like, let's say I wanted to change the font here, okay? Well, we didn't want to list every single font in the app bar itself. So if you click on font, it brings the flyout control up. So flyout control is the right kind of control to use to get more, you know, detailed information or more little subtasks up in front of the user. And it uses an important UI pattern we call light dismiss. So you see there's no close button on that flyout. If I just tap anywhere, it goes away, okay? Because the UI pattern is light dismiss. And that's part of our do more with less and part of our fast and fluid experience for MetroStyle apps is we don't want to have users have to manage the state of all these different UI widgets like they had to with Windows, with the close and move around and reposition and all this stuff. So everything is very lightweight. It's a temporary kind of task. There's no harm done if you just have that disappear. So use the flyout control. It automatically gives you that light dismiss, the right animation when it comes up. And then here I can go and I can, you know, change the font or whatever I want to do. Same with color. and you can see that as well. And that's actually the menu control there in that case. All right. So that's a bit of the app bar, a bit of menus, a bit of flyouts. And then I want to show you one more thing, which is the charms, the settings pane. And so let's get that coming up. So I'll delete this message. In an application, if you want to have settings, you saw and there's a settings charm. So if you swipe on the side, there's this button called settings here. Well, one of the controls you can use is the settings pane. And so if I want to go create accounts, here's the settings pane control, this control here on the side. And it's like the app bar. It kind of knows to come in from the side. It has the right animation and stuff. And it also has light dismiss. So you just tap away and it goes away. Okay. So the settings pane is another control you might want to use for commanding in your application. For things that are really about changing settings on the application, the settings pane is the control you kind of want to use for that in commanding. All right. So we talked about the app bar, talked about menus, talked about how it comes up with the swipe from the edge. We talked about light dismiss. And we talked about the settings pane. So let's go back to our deck. All right. We showed the primary commands in the app canvas. So remember, new, respond, delete were right there. We used the app bar, the menus, and the flyouts to show more commands on demand. There's a consistent, lightweight model for how these things came up and how they went away. All those things you could do with touch, mouse, or keyboard. I showed the keyboard shortcuts and touch and so forth. And I showed how they were correctly positioned based on the size of the screen, based on whether the touch keyboard was up and so forth. So you get all that stuff for free using the controls and following these patterns. And people wouldn't expect things to work like this in your application. All right. So now it's about scrolling content. if we've, let's see, where are we on time? OK, good. Oh, we're great on time. So we've talked about laying out your application, navigating around the application, commanding in it. That's about scrolling content. And this is very important because when we thought about Metro-style UI and we thought about touch, and we knew that was a new important input mechanism, we found that one of the most important things about touch is scrolling and panning content. When we looked at users and we said, what do you like to use touch for? What don't you like to use touch for? We found that for things like typing, people actually prefer the hard, you know, the physical keyboard. It's better for typing, you know. But the thing that people really like about touch, their favorite thing above all other things, is panning and scrolling with touch because it's so direct. It creates a direct connection between the user and the content. If you think about traditionally, if you were to scroll content with a mouse, what is involved with that? Well, if you think about it, you have to move this little box on your desk to cause a little arrow to move on the screen onto another little rectangle to move that little rectangle down so the content moves up. It's like 30 steps that your head actually has to go through to think about that. And with touch, you just go and you just move it, and it's just kind of, you know, you moved it up, and you're done. And so there's a lot of mental math that your brain has to do today to scroll content. And that's why people really like actually using touch to scroll content. And so we spent a lot of time thinking about how to have a great pattern around that for users in Windows 8. The basics of the scrolling pattern is as follows. If you're in the idle state, so the user hasn't moved the mouse, they haven't touched anything yet, you just see the content. This is more of that do more with less. We want to have more Chrome and more widgets on screen. You just see the content itself. You don't see a scroll bar. You don't see anything. Now, if you start using touch or the keyboard to scroll, then you see a little panning indicator. So you get to see a little bar that shows up, and it lets you see how far along are you in the content. So if you have a very big piece of content, the bar will be small, and you can kind of see where it goes. If you have a short piece of content, it'll be a bigger bar, you know, and it'll move faster. Okay, so it shows you relative to the amount of space where you are. And then if you move your mouse at all over the content, then you get the full scroll bar. And then you can do all the things you could always do with the scroll bar. You can drag the thumb. You can click on the arrows. You can click on the space between the arrows and the thumb. It's the full-featured scroll bar you always know and love. So the scrolling pattern is kind of like this in Windows 8 for Metrocell apps. But beyond this, there's a lot of details to how we made the scrolling and the panning work that I want to make you aware of, and a lot of capabilities there that you might want to take advantage of when we think about that experience. In addition to panning, there's also zooming. So the scroll view controls in Windows 8, whether you're using CSS to do them in HTML or whether you're using the scroll view in XAML, have full zooming support now. So you can just pinch zoom and have full optical zoom, and it's still fully interactive and fully rich when you do that, and I'll show you that. There's also something called Rails. So Rails is the technology we use to make it always kind of move in the direction you wanted it to, even if, as a user, you're a little bit sloppy about stuff. You see there's inertia and there's boundary effects, so I'm going to show as you pan, it kind of gets some momentum going and it moves by itself, even if you lift your finger. And when you get to the ends, you see these boundary effects. I'm also going to show you snap points. Snap points is ways you can mark certain points in the content where you want it to naturally land, for like scenarios like flipping through pages of a book, for example. And I'll show you that. There's also full support we have for nesting and chaining. So nesting is, imagine if you have a scroll view that's scrolling this way, and then inside it you put another scroll view. How does that work? Well, we thought that all through and built that support right into the patterns for you. So using the standard controls, you get the right behaviors there. And chaining is the same thing. If I have a scroller inside another scroller and I get to the end, I can keep scrolling and then it'll pull the parent scroller. Okay, so chaining, nesting, all these things are kind of built into that. Let me show you these things, and you can understand there's really a lot of depth to how we thought about scrolling and how you want to use scrolling in your applications, because it's such a predominant paradigm in Metro-style UI. And I'm going to show this to you in two apps, primarily the calendar app. One of the other apps is kind of there for you on the box if you install the release preview, and Internet Explorer. So let's open the calendar app. Here's my calendar. And I want to point out a few things. I can scroll horizontally in this. And you see as I scroll horizontally, it just goes month by month, or week by week, I guess, in this case. And it snaps naturally. So every time I get to a certain month, it'll just snap to that month. Right? It always ends. It doesn't ever end like in the middle here, okay? That's using the snap view feature. So you see it has a very smooth effect, but because they configured snap points, it kind of will automatically snap at those points. The second thing you may have noticed that I did that I want to point out is I can also scroll up and down. So in the same exact setting, I have nested scrollers. So I have a big scroller, which is scrolling left and right, and then inside it, I put a scroller which is scrolling up and down. And the system knows how to take care of that for you, and it knows how to detect. So if I start moving this way, it goes this way. If I start moving this way, it'll go left and right. If I go to an angle, it'll kind of try and figure out the right thing to do for you. And using the scroll views, it'll have the consistent pattern that kind of users are accustomed to. If I go and I switch to another view, I think they also did a really good job with the day view. Here you can see how you can use snap points, not at the full screen, but like half screen. Okay, so here they have snap points, but they're every half screen. So I don't have to, it's not flipping the whole screen, it's just flipping half the screen at a time, right? And still I have the nesting. In fact, I can move two things if I want. I can move this one here, or I can move this one here. So I have two nested scrollers inside a bigger scroller, okay? So there's support for lots of ways you can configure instead of scrollers to create this kind of experience that's really touch first, where users can kind of just kind of pan through content, scroll up and down in content, and so forth. So that shows you, and then the other thing I want to show is boundary effects. So here I'm at the end of the day Friday. So if I pull back, if I pull too far, you'll see that it kind of bounces back and forth. It doesn't let me kind of go any further than midnight, because that's the end of the day. So that's built into the control as well. So you get boundary effects, you get that inertia as I scroll, you have support for snap points, you have support for nesting these things one inside the other, and so forth. I also want to show you IE, because IE actually uses the same exact, let's go to TechEd Europe. Site. Here we go. TechEd, IE uses the same exact scroll view control that we built to do its scrolling as well. And in IE, they showed the feature of zooming. So you can see that I can pinch to zoom in to content as well. And you can do that same thing in your application. You can put a little scroll view, hook it up to zooming, and you'll get all the same kind of experience and behavior. So you get the text re-renders. Everything's very sharp once you've zoomed in. Everything is fully interactive. If there was a text box here, if there's controls, UI, all that stuff can still be fully interactive, even in the zoomed up state. Okay, so there's very rich support for zooming as well in the platform using the scrolling kind of patterns that we have. So that's kind of a quick demo of a lot of the different things around scrolling that you'll want to know about and take advantage of. Let me switch back to the deck. All right, we talked about that. using those scroll views. One thing I didn't show you is how they work with mouse and touch and keyboard. So let me go and show you that for a second. But those same patterns, have all the support there. You can also control mouse wheel to zoom. All those kinds of things you expect kind of work. Control plus, control minus. So all those keyboard shortcuts, the mouse experience, you have all those ways of zooming and so forth. And there's also programmatic support. So you can programmatically control stuff to do that as well. All right. And there's a lot of work we did to achieve stick-to-the-finger performance. And so I want to talk about how that stuck to the finger. Don't try to build this yourself by just listening to the touch events and moving stuff around. Because we did a lot of work to actually move all the input to a delegate thread so that it doesn't block the UI thread, so that while you're panning, the reason you have that very smooth experience, even if you have animations and video and other stuff going on, is because we've separated off the UI thread when you're using the scroll view control, and it all goes through a delegate thread, all the input, and that allows us to do all that processing in a way that doesn't block or affect your UI thread at all. And so you should really use the scroll view control to have that stick to the finger performance. Don't try to just kind of move stuff around yourself. You just won't have that performance. For XAML, to scroll view control, for HTML, I want to point out that if you've used the CSS overflow, so overflow colon auto or overflow colon true, those are the basic APIs you use, and we've actually extended CSS quite a bit to have all these extra CSS properties to control the snap points, the zooming, and all that kind of stuff. So that's how you kind of can use the platform to implement these things. All right, presenting data. So we've talked about laying out your application, navigating around the content in your application, commanding, scrolling through stuff. Now, a very common thing you're going to scroll through is data. And so we defined a few patterns around presenting data and letting you scroll through and work with data. They are, at the center of it all is kind of the grid view control. You see this all the time in applications. We've seen that a bit today. To the left of that is the list view control. So the grid view kind of scrolls left and right. The list views for up and down, like you saw in the mail app. You might use that if you have some data, but also some other data you're trying to show at the same time. And then there's a flip view control, so I'll show you that. These different controls support a lot of capabilities. They've built in animations. They support selection, grouping, and I'll show you some examples of that. And there's also semantic zoom, which is important in presenting data. And it's one of the controls and patterns we have. So let's take a look at these in a few different apps. We're going to look at this in mail. So in the mail app, they use the list pattern here. One of the things I want to point out is that the list patterns and list controls we built are fully data virtualized and UI virtualized. So you can have very large sets of data, and you can kind of scroll through them and have pretty good performance because all this stuff is virtualized and it's kind of loading dynamically as needed from the system. So it's not blocking the UI or creating lots of data kind of in memory all the time. You can see that this supports, panning, and I can scroll with the mouse, of course, as well. Again, still have that good performance. And you can really control the data with the list control. So all the controls let you template the data. So in the mail app, they templated the data this way. They define those templates directly in HTML. This app is written in HTML, or directly in XAML if you're using XAML to do it. You have total control over the way the data is templated within each item, even though it's coming from this virtualized kind of data-bound way. And you can have selection. So I showed you how you can cross slide to select. That's the standard pattern for selecting in Windows 8, is that you slide the opposite direction of the panning. So if a panning is up and down, to select stuff, you just cross slide that way. With the mouse, you do it using right click. So if I right click, that also toggles selection. It's very much like control click. For those of you familiar with control click, same thing. And there's still the full keyboard support as well. So I can use the keyboard and I can hit spacebar as I move focus between items to change selection. Okay, so all the keyboard shortcuts, all the mouse support, all those things are still there with the list controls. They work just as you expect, in addition to all the new ways like cross slide to select with touch. All right, so you get all that using this control. The next one I want to show is the SkyDrive app. Here's another application. Here they're showing off the grid view control, and you can see they take advantage of the multi-size layout, so they made some tiles bigger, some tiles smaller. You can do cell spanning to do that. So the grid control supports that. So you can make very rich layouts with it. And it also supports grouping. So you see they have a group here of folders on the left, and they have a group of some files on the right. So you can group stuff using the grid control. You can go into the sections and so forth. Another feature I want to show is selection here. So where selection was left and right swiping, in the list view, in the grid view, it's up and down swiping. Okay, so you can select. That's built into the control for you. You can customize these visuals. See how it's a deep blue here? If you remember in the Mail app, it was like a greenish color. So you can change the colors of these things and control them and so forth. And there's built-in animations for a lot of things you might do. So if I delete an item, so let's say I select this photo here and I say delete. Yep. You see it animated that. And I could even have done it for several. I could have deleted this and this. Delete. Okay. So there's animations built in for all these kinds of things for inserting and deleting items. And this is talking live to a web service. So my SkyDrive, you know, in the cloud, just had those files deleted on it. That's why they confirmed that. And yet you still have that smooth kind of experience using the controls. So you get all those kinds of features for you automatically. You also might see, as I loaded each screen, see how the items came in, were animated in? Oops. That's also built into the, those kinds of animations are also built into the grid view control. So you get lots of animations like that. And then finally, if I open up the store, I want to show you the flip view. So if I go to an app like this app here, I think they have, nope, they don't have many screens. Let's go to one that does. I know that Cut the Rope does. So this is the flip view control. And so it not only gives you that kind of snapping kind of experience, but they actually put in little buttons here. So for mouse, you kind of get that all built in. And you can control what page you're on, so you can jump to a certain page or see which page you're on down here. So the flip view control is another control that we have around presenting data. And finally, there's the semantic zoom. And I'm going to show you that in the People app. I've showed you that in a few different apps before. But here in the People app, I want to point it out. Again, I have a lot of people, so I can just zoom out and then go into a different section to the U's or to the G's or whatever section I want to go into. So that's the semantic zoom control. And that's a very common control you want to use for presenting data to people, is a semantic zoom. And here, I want to point out they hooked it up. How does semantic zoom work? You hook it up to two different presentations, the zoomed out presentation and the zoomed in presentation. And in this case here, this app is using the grid view control for the zoomed out presentation. This is the standard grid view control. But they actually built a custom control because see how they lay out the content like a phone book? So if I make it to the B, see how the B header is there? They're actually just, they created a custom layout here because they wanted to have a phone book style layout. So you can use semantic zoom even if you're using a custom layout, not necessarily one of the built-in, you know, controls, or you can use it with the built-in controls. Both are possible. All right, so there we go around presenting data. We talked about the grid pattern, the list pattern, the flip view, the semantic zoom, how you get animations and selection, how you have keyboard and mouse interaction models for using them. And again, these controls, there's HTML and there's XAML kind of versions of them. And you can connect them to data on the cloud, local data. You can define the templates yourselves. But you still have that common kind of pattern. You're going to use this very often in your applications. Then I want to say a couple things about essential controls. There's just a whole bunch of widgets and things we've provided. And there's a lot of detail to how we implemented these patterns that you'll want to take advantage of by using the actual controls. Everything from sliders and progress rings and combo boxes and date pickers and toggle switches and so forth. And they provide extensive styling. So actually, we had a bunch of interns last summer. And they were the first guinea pigs for making apps with the platform. And so we had them come, and we said, make apps with our platforms. And of course, they all wanted to style them and individualize things. And so you know, we just thought it was fun to see, you know, before, this is kind of the default styles you get. And then when the interns went, they kind of styled them and did all this. And so they're very rich. So you can use these controls and all the patterns I've talked about today, everything I've shown you, there's a tremendous amount of visual control you have to still have the same behavior, the same look and feel, the same pattern, the same experience, the same principles, but to really visually have it highlight, you know, the look you want and so forth, but it still interacts the same. And I'm going to show you a couple quick demos of that. And I'm actually going to use an SDK sample to show you that. So where's my central controls? This is one of the SDK samples. And everything I've shown you, there's great SDK samples you want to download to use to actually learn all the APIs and so forth around. The two controls I want to show you here is I want to show you really quickly the combo box. Let's see where I have that. The select control, that's what it is in HTML. So some of the things we did around just this control here, just to highlight how we took a control and optimized them for touch in Windows 8, is If you tap, it kind of comes up animated. It comes centered, so it's less movement to pick things. The control is still smart about the edges, so if I kind of put it up at the top edge, it'll pop down. Even if I'm on watermelon, it'll pop down in that case. But ordinarily, it shows up centered. And if I have a long list, I can scroll either up or down. So we've all seen these kinds of lists of countries or lists of states. I happen to live in the state of Washington, and so I love that I can just go kind of back upwards instead of having to scroll down always. So it's very flexible. You can go up or down. And of course, all the keyboard shortcuts works. I can use the arrow keys to bring it up. I can type ahead. I can type a letter R, and it jumps to R. So all the kind of things that you expect are there. There's a super powerful keyboard and mouse and so forth, but we've optimized it for touch, animations, you know, have it look nice and so forth. You can still style these things and make them colored and all sorts of stuff like that. The other one I want to show you is the slider control. This is another one that you can put it sideways, you can put it up and down, you can have it have certain snap points. This can only go to certain, you know, 8, 12, it doesn't go to every value. Or this one here goes to every single value, you know, you want. You can color them, you can have tick marks or not have tick marks. You can move where the tick marks are. You can hide the tooltip. You can totally style it in a totally custom way. But no matter what you do to it, it still interacts for users in a consistent way. So if I tap, for example, we found that users, when they tap, they just want this thumb to go there directly. And so if you use the slider control, if I just tap, it goes there, or I can slide to put it there. Either way works. And if I'm sloppy with my finger, maybe I'm not perfect, I don't stay on it, I move off. You see, you can still move off it, but it still works. And in fact, there's a little line that connects it that shows you kind of what you're interacting with, okay? So you can kind of see that connection there. Someone put these together in a fun way. They made a multi-touch equalizer, and so I can actually, you know, use two of them at the same time. Whoops, let's see. I should be able to use two at the same time. Maybe I'm having a little hiccup here, but, oh, I guess I won't do that right now. But anyway, you can have multiple of these things and interact with them and so forth. And so that's just a quick preview of a couple of the kind of essential controls that we have. Take advantage of them. Use these. There's a lot of detail to the behavior of them that users are going to become accustomed to and expect. And so you'll want to use those in making your apps. And then finally, I want to talk about the text editing patterns. All of us have text editing in our applications. And there's a lot of work we've done around how text editing works in Metro-style apps. First, there's a lot of work on the text boxes themselves. So you'll see text boxes have these clear buttons, or password boxes have a password reveal button. We're very happy about that, because if you type a password, you can hold that button down and see the password temporarily, and then you can lift it, and then you don't see it anymore. So you're not, if someone's looking, you project, they don't see every keystroke you type, for example, like some other systems. You know, the user's in control of when that happens. And it's easy to clear stuff. We have rich text and multi-line text and so forth. We have text selection, and it works with touch, and I'll show you that, the touch model for text selection. There's cut, copy, and paste, of course, and there's spell checking in all text boxes in Windows 8. So if you used any app you create, any Metro-style app, you have spell checking in it by default using the text controls. And then there's a bunch of integration with the touch keyboard. So the text controls know to make the touch keyboard show up in the right way. And in fact, you can tell the text controls what type of input you're looking for, and you'll get the right keyboard. So if you want number input, you say that, and then you get the number keyboard. Otherwise, you get the regular keyboard. Okay, so there's a lot of control you have over that kind of stuff that you'll want. And people will expect kind of that you do these the right way in your application. And so we're going to go, and we're going to switch to the demo of that. And I'm going to launch the store. And let's say I'm writing a review on this app here. I'm going to show a few of the features, okay? So I'm going to start typing this review. And maybe I say it's hilarious app. And for those of you who know how to spell English correctly, I misspelled the word hilarious here, okay? And so when I hit space, it got auto-corrected, all right? So auto-correct is built into all the text boxes. It's there both with physical keyboard and with the touch keyboard. There's auto-correct built in. Hilarious app. So let's say that's what I wanted to call this title. Maybe I changed my mind. I didn't want to call it that. So I can just press this clear button here and clear that text in one fell swoop very easily. That's part of the text pattern. All the text controls have that for easy clearing. I can type app is contagious. See, the autocorrection there is contagious fun. I can select text. I can stop autocorrecting stuff if I wanted to do that. I can select text with touch, so I can just to do that, you just tap on a word, That puts the word, that moves the cursor there, and you just grab this little gripper to select whatever the textures you want to grab. Let's say I want to drag that. I can tap on it again to cut it. So all these things you can do kind of with touch. I can paste it here by tapping in that little gripper again, and so forth. So you kind of have all those kinds of features built into the text experience. Selection with text, with touch, copy and paste, so forth, autocorrect. And there's also spell checking. So if I type, I really like this app, you see that got spelled incorrectly. It got underlined in red, and I can correct it. Okay, so you have all this kind of power with the text controls. I'm going to open up one more sample. That sample I showed you before, there's a whole section on text input controls there. And you can see things, for example, like the right keyboard showing up. So if I have an email input, I get the .com button. If I have a number, I get the number pad, and so forth. And it's very powerful what you can do with the text controls. You can style them, and you can make it look like Star Wars if you want. You know, you can do all sorts of fun stuff. And it's fully functional, even when you do this kind of stuff. So if I go here and I, you know, type a word, whoops, really, again, and I misspell it, it's hard to see, but there's actually a little underline there, and I can spell check it and so forth. So it's a full feature, you know, controls, you know, even when you apply all these kinds of stylings and special capabilities to them. That's kind of the text editing patterns. Very powerful text editing experience. All the keyboard shortcuts, you know, the one other thing I was going to show you there, actually, because I love demoing this stuff, is that all the keyboard shortcuts you guys know, all the power user shortcuts are still there. So if you do control shift left arrow, control up and down, like all those, you know, shortcuts that all us power users know, all of those work in all the text controls as well, whether it's HTML, whether it's XAML, and so forth. So there's really powerful experience. It works with touch, mouse, and keyboard. There's spell checking. There's integration with the touch keyboard. Take advantage of those text controls to make great apps. And I showed you some of the rich text capabilities when I showed you the mail app before. So to kind of sum up, today we covered a lot of stuff, I know. But we said, what is MetroStyle UI? We said it's a set of common UI patterns that are grounded in a set of principles and supported by the Windows 8 platform. We saw a lot of those patterns today, around layout, around navigation, around commanding, around scrolling content, around presenting data. We saw all those essential controls. We saw text editing, all those UI patterns you'll want to use to make your application. We talked about a lot of the principles that went behind it, about the pride in craftsmanship, to make sure no matter how you do stuff, it always feels designed and intentional for users, around fast and fluid and using animations appropriately and making things just seem fast and fluid and striking that balance. Around things being authentically digital, none of the apps that I showed you had a lot of kind of excess, you know, real-world metaphors there. They're just really functional and focused on, you know, getting things done effectively and the power of the computer, like semantic zoom. Do more with less, and how we had the app bar that let you have more kind of activity available but not on the screen all the time. And win is one. We talked about a lot of the controls and things you can use and take advantage of so that your app is great right away without you having to do a lot of the extra work yourself. We talked about how all the stuff you can do in XAML with C++ and C#, and in HTML with the controls we have there, both built into HTML and in the library for JavaScript, with the same platform, the same spell checking engine, the same touch gestures, the same experience. To get started, use the controls, use the VS templates. A lot of the stuff I showed is built right in there. Use the SDK samples. I showed just one of them. Read the docs and the guidelines. We have a lot of material up on MSDN now. That's it. So thank you very much. And I'll be available for any questions up here. And then I have another session later today where I focus on the APIs for HTML and JavaScript if you're interested in that. Thanks.